I'm delighted to welcome today a very beautiful lady, Carrington Smith, who is an author, a lawyer, a mother, and an all-round good egg. Welcome to the podcast, Carrington.
Thank you for having me, Elaine.
Marvellous. Unusual name, Carrington, although I think people call you Carrie, but Carrington.
They do, yeah.
Is there any particular story that goes behind the name?
There is, actually. My great aunt, so my mother's grandfather's sister, her name was Elizabeth Carrington Draper, and she was a famous interior designer on Park Avenue in New York. She actually decorated the American Embassy in Paris and Blair House, which is the vice president's residence in the US. And that's who I'm named after.
Wonderful. And do you follow in her footsteps in terms of the interior design?
My sister does. My sister has a decorating business, so she got that gene. I got the name, she got the gene.
Cool. That sounds a fair swap, doesn't it, at the end of the day? So we're here to talk in particular about the book that you've just published, which,
yes,
I have to say is absolutely astounding. It's not very often that I have the opportunity to fully read, or in your case here, because I listen to it on audio, hear a book for people that I interview. So that was a really great opportunity for me. So that also gives me lots of questions that I can ask. So that's fabulous. Tell us about the book, what it's called, and why you wrote it.
Sure. So the book is called Blooming, Finding Gifts in the Shit of Life. And that, using that term was very intentional, because shit is quite literally fertilizer. And it's in the messes, failures, trauma, difficulties of life that we find what we need to bloom into our greatness. And so while we're swearing as we're going through it, one of the big points of the book is that from adversity comes opportunity and blessings. And so if you can shift your mindset to keeping your eye on that prize while you're going through it, it certainly helps.
Absolutely. What you just said there is so true. When we're in the midst of adversity, we can't always see that there's a silver lining. But
yeah,
some people in life are naturally more optimistic and some people are naturally more pessimistic. So how would you describe yourself?
Optimistic, for sure.
I would go a step further. I would say, in terms of glass half full or glass half empty, I would say your glass is overflowing.
Oh.
Having read some of the amazing stories, and I'm sure probably only part of your life is in the book, but I highly recommend it. It's a great read. So it's called Blooming. And also, I was really quite taken the fact that you'd narrated it yourself.
Yeah.
That was really good, because you were able to put the correct emphasis.
Yeah.
You know, and it really came from the heart. So well done with that. It's excellent.
Thank you.
Apart from what you've just said about finding joy and et cetera in adversities and strength and so on, what led you to write the book and why now?
So with COVID happening, which is, you know, this horrible thing that's hitting the world all at once, I just saw so many people suffering, whether it was from losing a job or losing a loved one. And I had a very different reaction to COVID hitting than most people. You know, when we went into lockdown, my response was, bring it. Like, I've been through so much. I knew that I would survive it. I'm super resilient. I was like, okay, you know, what do I need to know? How do I strategize? What do I need to know for my family? But I also realized that many people, particularly those who are pessimistic, they tend to get mired in the mud and get stuck and not know how to proceed through things like this. And so I felt like it was time to write my book where I was actually giving a gift to humanity about, you know, perhaps a roadmap. I think we all learn through stories. And I was hoping that by sharing my story, it might provide a roadmap to people on how to find the silver lining in things and how to take the traumas and horrible things in life and turn them into, you know, move them from things that drain you into things that serve you now and can propel you to greatness. And so that huge shift in mindset is so powerful. And I thought, if I can just share my story where someone else kind of picks up on that, that would be a gift that would be really important at this time.
There's so many factors that you've brought into the book, so many different stories and you know, multiple aspects of your life. I'm sure that there's at least one, but if not several, kind of threads in there that people will be inspired by. In your experience rereading it, because I'm sure when you were going through the narration part of it, you went through it. Not everybody I speak to actually rereads what they've written. They've written it and they put it to one side and that's it. But I'm sure you must have done. So which part of the book particularly inspires you? If you were somebody reading your book, which do you think is the part that's really most inspirational?
Well, I think probably one of the most inspirational stories is the story of the rape. And how over time I took that from something that drained me into something that serves me. But probably one of the smallest stories, I think, is one of the most powerful. And that is the story of me in Las Vegas at the Bellagio getting doused by one of the fountains. And just briefly for the listeners, I'll tell the story. And that is, I had gone to the Bellagio. I wanted to see the fountains. We made a dinner reservation at a restaurant that had a patio overlooking the fountains, and all the tables had umbrellas. And just as I finished my dinner and was standing up, stepped out from under the umbrella, the wind hit one of the fountains just right. And it was like a tidal wave. It doused me from head to toe. And the girl who I was there with was dry. She was looking at me like, oh no, our night is ruined. And I realized in that split second that I had a choice to make. Our night could be ruined, or I could view the event as something positive. And so I said, you know, what are the odds of getting doused by a fountain? You know, I've been baptized by the holy water. We're going to win tonight. Let's go. And we had a great night. I mean, I dried off really quickly, got my act together, and we got out there. But it's that split second decision, the choice you make about how you view an event and the story you tell yourself, that is so determinative of the outcome of your life. I mean, that's one split second moment, but on a daily basis, we're making those choices.
Absolutely true. It's not what happens to us, it's the choice we make. So it's our mindset, and from that, it's the actions we take as well, isn't it, of course.
Yeah.
But sometimes we are in a situation where we're repeatedly told, you know, we're not good at this, or we're not pretty, or we're fat, or, you know, whatever it is. And you had no end of people telling you all these kinds of things, and yet you're shining. So. When was the kind of wake up time for you? And perhaps you can tell some of the stories of, you know, things your grandmother said to you, or things your father said to you, which were really quite hurtful and horrible.
Yeah. Well, so my father had a knack for saying the most hurtful things possible. I asked him when I was a little girl if I was pretty, and he scrunched up his nose at me and kind of gave me the once over and said, no, you're not pretty, but your sister, now she's beautiful. And from there on went this, you know, downward spiral. Just, you know, I wore the mantle of being the ugly duckling. I did everything I could to look like my sister. And it wasn't until paternal grandmother, saw what was going on, and she took me aside and gave me a mustard seed and said to me, she gave me this little charm with a mustard seed in it. And she said, you know, plant your seed so you can grow. Plant your seed away from your sister so that you can chart your own course and grow into a great tree. But in order to grow, you have to plant yourself away from your sister. And she saw how I was trying to be like her, and she encouraged me to chart my own course. And she made me believe in myself that I could do it. And so it literally, she planted the seed metaphorically, but also by handing me a mustard seed and explaining to me how I could do that by pursuing things different from my sister and building self-esteem on things that were achievements that were separate and away from her. And that's when I gradually began to build self-esteem.
How old were you then, Carrie?
I was in college. I was a sophomore in college.
So you'd already gone through quite a lot of heart-rending conversations and disappointment and so on and so forth. And did what she say to you have an instant effect, or did it, was it one of these things, was it an aha moment, or was it kind of something that rumbled on?
It was a little bit of both. I mean, I understood what she was saying, but when people say those things, you're like, yeah, easier said than done, right? But it really stuck with me. I think also the other part of that moment was that it happened after the rape and before I transferred to the University of Texas. And I think by getting away from my family and getting to Texas, it helped me to really plant that seed and grow into my own person. And so it was the timing of it too.
Mm. So making the physical move, the separation. Because what's in our mind is one thing, but the actions we take is, you know, they don't always reflect, do they? So well done there. Is there any particular message that you want to get over to the reader? Apart from, you know, shit happens and there's always a kind of a nice part to it. I mean, or is that it? Are there any other kind of threads that you want to build on for the reader?
Well, I think mindset is everything. And it's the daily, as I said, you know, it's the daily choices we make that determine the outcome of our life. So in every moment, we are given a choice on how we want to view it. And it's also the story we tell ourselves. Mm-hmm. So a big part of my recovery was going through therapy, spending a year on the couch, and unpacking all that negative dialogue from my father and replacing it with more loving dialogue towards myself. So, you know, I think growing up, we always have that tape going in our head. We can hear our father or mother or whoever it is in our life, you know, saying, oh, you know, you suck, you're ugly, you're, you know, those, that self-loathing. And as I did the work and healed from the damage my father had done, I changed the dialogue I was having with myself to being kinder and more compassionate towards myself. And there were a number of tools, I mean, therapy, but also I did some what they call healing hypnosis, where I had a hypnotherapist take me back to memories, travel back in time, and then I would revisit the memory as I am today and talk to myself in that moment and, you know, be loving and say, you know, this is horrible, what's happening. You're a wonderful child. Don't listen to him, you know. Having that person advocating for me and, you know, changing that memory through that process, that also really, really helped me.
You've mentioned your father a few times, but no mention of your mother. What was your mother's role in this situation? My dad wasn't a terribly kind man, but what about your mother?
Say, that's putting it lightly. my mother... her essence was that she was sweet and kind. But she was very much codependent on my father. And, you know, when she was younger, she was vibrant and full of life. But my father demanded total submission from all of us. And my mother, I mean, it started with moving her across country away from her friends and family. So she had no support system. And then she was expected to do everything that he asked of her. And so that meant he eliminated anything that got in the way. So friends, tennis, bridge, you know, neighborhood coffees all got eliminated if they conflicted with his schedule and what he wanted. And gradually she gave herself over to the point that she would introduce herself as Mrs. Dr. John Smith, as opposed to Dottie Smith. Like, her identity completely disappeared. And she would express herself by talking about her physical functions, because that was all that was left. So she would talk about, you know, her different times of the month and her, you know, her menstrual cycle. That was the only way that she could express, like literally express herself, because there was nothing left of it. It was really sad.
So looking back now, how difficult is it for you to look back? I mean, do you look back now on things that happened in your childhood as kind of, you know, do you have treasured memories? Do you feel resentful? How do you look back on your childhood?
I look back on it with forgiveness and actually thankfulness. One of the biggest moments for me in healing was when someone asked me what was the greatest gift that I had. And I said, intuition. And they said, well, how did you get that gift? And as I thought about it, I realized that the gift of intuition came from walking on eggshells around my father. And I also realized that if I was going to give thanks for the gift of intuition, I must also give thanks for the path that birthed the gift. And when I had that realization, I suddenly was free from all the anger and resentment towards my father. It was the most amazing experience, because suddenly I could forgive him and express gratitude for all the hardship I went through. And the most beautiful part of that was that I was free from him. Every time I expressed anger or resentment towards him, he had power over me. But when I reached that moment of actually feeling pity for him, for his behavior, I was liberated. So to me, that was like when you realize, okay, I am the person I am today because of what I went through, and you can have gratitude for your past. Suddenly it's like a weight lifting, and all that toxicity that's in your body is like gone. It's such a beautiful thing.
And I so identify with that, because over the years I've mentored a lot of people through cancer, and every single time they don't heal. Many times we've had some wonderful stories, but in the cases where they don't heal terribly well, it's always because they're carrying toxicity within their body. They're carrying the emotions. They can eat the best diet. They can have what they think is a good mindset, good support structure, et cetera, et cetera. But if they haven't dealt with past emotions, the trauma stays within the body, the cells pick it up, and the body's never going to heal. So that's just really profound that you've said that. And also, some people will be listening to this on audio, but for those who are on the video call, I know I can hear some people saying, well, how can such a young girl have, you know, so many experiences and be so kind of grown up about it all? Tell us how old you are, Carrie, because it was a real shock to me when you told me.
I'm 54.
Which is remarkable, because you look, you know, in your early 30s. So it's just absolutely amazing how
you come
through, and only just, you know, a tinsy bit, a third maybe through your life, because obviously you're in your 30s. So and you're third way through.
Yeah.
So is there anything that you'd like to say to the listeners before we close? Anything, any sort of top tips or anything like that, perhaps?
Well, if there's one thing they take away from this, that is, you know, in life, we have a choice. It's a roller coaster, right? We know that. And we can throw up our hands and scream in terror with all the bumps, or you can throw up your hands and scream with joy and just enjoy the ride. And so just at every moment, make the choice to view life through adventure, humor, gratitude, empathy, and you'll have a much better life experience.
Mm-hmm. Well said, absolutely spot on. So tell the listeners how they can get hold of your book, Carrie.
So you can get it on Amazon.com. And again, it's Blooming, Finding Gifts in the Shit of Life by Carrington Smith.
Wonderful. And it's also available as an audiobook as well.
Yes.
Wonderful. And I believe you have a website which has got some additional information.
I do. It's Carrington-Smith.com. And there are photos from the book. There's also a Spotify playlist, which is an important component. So there are a number of things that are part of or go with the book that are on the website.
Why did you create the Spotify playlist? What's the relevance there?
Well, when I got divorced, I had somebody ask me what my favorite music was, and I couldn't answer the question because everything was about him. And so I was like, I don't know. And so I realized that it was really important for me to establish my own identity and figure out what it was that I liked. And so part of that exercise for me was, you know, when I wrote this book, I was like, I'm going to include a playlist to show that I've done the work. So.
Brilliant. Fantastic. So Carrington Smith, author of Blooming, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you, Elaine.